fighting for America.
Unless we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place. Remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
Fighting for Idaho.
Who decides when a law-abiding citizen is trained enough to defend themselves? And I don't think any of us, whether that's the legislators, the sheriffs, other citizens, have the right to tell someone when they are qualified to defend their life.
Fighting for you.
The pipeline is the way that they carry the product from the wells.
I know what a pipeline is, but okay.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
5 after 8, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Thank you all for joining us. And coming up this hour, we'll go live to Alabama. You're thinking, Alabama? Why are we going to Alabama? Well, this issue involving the gay marriage, the big Supreme Court ruling. Now you have the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, Roy Moore, that very guy that 10 or 15 years ago stood up to the politically correct Politburo and said, I'm going to display the Ten Commandments in my courtroom, and there's not a darn thing that you can do about it, right? Yeah, exactly. That same guy who, in fact, stood up to the federal government before is doing the same thing now, but as you heard at the top of the hour, it doesn't look good for him. Also, the latest on Brian Williams, where Mr. Williams has taken a few days off. Now, how would you like to be somebody like Brian Williams, where you make a huge mistake, and gosh knows, we all don't want to be judged because we all make mistakes, some of us bigger than others, and instead of getting suspended by the boss, what happens? You decide to take a few days off because you're quote-unquote in the news. It is amazing when you think about what's going on. By the way, a little over the weekend, getting back to Rhonda's call, you have the president now considering arming the Ukrainian rebels. Germany and France and others in Europe don't want us to give them lethal force weapons. In other words, they believe that the Ukraine is not worth going to war over. The president seems to up the ante. It's funny that we can give weapons to the Ukrainians, but we can't give weapons to stop the ISIS folks. Those are just some of the stories that were going on here this morning at 580-KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. When we're taking a look at that as well. So, those are some things, I guess, as we're waiting for Mark Krikorian. Now, the Williams case is very interesting when we're thinking about this. And if you haven't heard what he said on David Letterman, let's take a listen.
We were in some helicopters. What we didn't know was we were north of the invasion. We were the northernmost Americans in Iraq. We were going to drop some bridge portions across the Euphrates so the 3rd Infantry could cross on them. Two of our 4 helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
What altitude were you hit at?
We were only at 100 feet doing 100 forward knots because we...
Now, he's very specific there. Let's hear his apology.
On this broadcast last week, in an effort to honor and thank a veteran who protected me and so many others after a ground fire incident in the desert during the Iraq War invasion, I made a mistake in recalling the events of 12 years ago. It did not take long to hear from some brave men and women in the air crews who were also in that desert. I want to apologize. I said I was traveling in an aircraft that was hit by RPG fire.
Now, he was very specific there, right? He was very specific. Now, his apology goes on and talking about that in his attempt to honor the troops, he made a mistake. Well, then he repeated that mistake again and again and again. Now, what would have happened if it had been, let's say, Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck? Would the media be that forgiving? Would you be that forgiving? Well, I think it would be a little different as far as the outrage goes, and we'll get into that coming up. Joining us now from the Center for Immigration Studies, Mark Krikorian. Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us here, Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO. So We begin with the possibility that there could be a deal on immigration.
Well, maybe. Unfortunately, any deal that the Congress ends up striking with the president isn't going to be a good deal. I mean, I'm not really sure that for the next 2 years we're going to end up with anything that's actually useful or constructive out of, the combination of this Congress and this president.
Well, here's the thing that gets me. The Republicans were elected by a mandate. Over 60 or 70% of the American people that voted for this new Republican Congress said, look, we don't want a deal on the illegals. We want to make sure that American workers don't have to compete with people that are here illegally. And yet, whether it's John Boehner or his acolytes, we don't get that representation. Am I wrong in this?
No, you're right. The fact is that much of the Republican leadership, first of all, on the amnesty and enforcement issue, basically agree with Obama. I mean, they're not, they sort of say some of the right things just because they want to appear responsive to voters. But then on what I have to say is probably the bigger issue of how many legal immigrants we let in, they're with Obama too. They want to increase immigration. In fact, one of the reasons Speaker Boehner pushed a border bill early on, which was kind of laid aside for a little while. It wasn't really much of a bill. It wasn't terrible, but it didn't really do much of anything. But the reason for it was to be, if they could pass it, was to say, look, we passed this tough border bill. We have fixed the problem, as though, it did anything. It was just a piece of paper. So that they could then say, okay, now it's time to let in even more foreign workers, more foreign computer programmers, more foreign labor to satisfy the Chamber of Commerce and the lobbyists. That was the goal, and that's, in a kind of economy we have now, is just completely inappropriate.
What was your response to Senator Sessions last week grilling the Attorney General nominee, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, and saying, shouldn't American workers have an advantage when it comes to jobs? And she basically saying there should be no requirements as far as citizenship for people that work in America today.
Yeah, I mean, it was really kind of remarkable. She said, well, anybody who's here, whatever their legal status, they should be working. It's like, what? I mean, later the White House, called up Senator Schumer and told him, come up with some questions so she can walk that back. But, she said what she really thought, not what she thought even, but what this administration thinks. The basic animating principle when it comes to immigration for these guys, and this isn't just a lefty thing. You hear this from a lot of corporate and libertarian people who are ostensibly on the right as well. But the basic idea is that we really don't have a right to limit the number of foreigners coming here. That, if people want to come here, so long as they're not terrorists or mass murderers, it's up to them whether they move here, not up to us whether we give them permission to move here. And so what she said really wasn't that much of a surprise. It was just, it was accidentally speaking the truth.
It does make you wonder. So we're going to hear from the pro-amnesty crowd coming up. There'll be another push to get a bill in. Do you believe that that the Republicans will capitulate? Because you can't do it without the Republicans in both houses, and the president will add to his resume/legacy by getting something done that may or may not be good for the American people.
Well, I mean, clearly the Odd Bedfellows Alliance of the hard left with the corporate libertarian folks is going to try to do that. I just don't see that happening. I mean, there's just no way something like that, a broad amnesty legalization plus increasing immigration is going to pass. I mean, look, if it didn't pass the House last Congress, even though it passed the Senate, this was the bill that Rubio and Schumer pushed, I don't see how it can pass this time. The problem is that probably nothing good is going to happen either. In other words, the kind of enforcement measures that we need aren't going to pass. So what we're going to have is legislatively probably not much change. What that means is the president is then going to, on his own, with his pen and his phone, as he says, basically try to subvert the immigration law. And he's gone a long way toward that. And the question is, how much farther is he going to go in that direction?
What, if anything, can John Boehner or Mitch McConnell do? And is there any political will to stop the president?
Well, I'm not really sure there is enough political will at the leadership level. My fear is that Boehner and McConnell just want to make it look like they're fighting the president's unilateral actions, basically illegally changing the rules. But that ultimately they're not doing what's necessary. And we saw that late last year when they passed a funding bill for the whole government except Homeland Security. They pulled Homeland Security out. The problem is, when they passed the long-term funding for all the other departments of the government, they basically gave away the leverage that they could have used against the president to force him to stop violating the law. I'm not sure they have much leverage left, and I think the reason for that is their heart really isn't in fighting the president. They actually don't mind if he amnesties people, even if it's usurping the Constitution and setting very dangerous precedent for the future. They don't mind because they see it as getting the problem out of the way, and they get to blame him for it instead of taking the blame for something that they actually want anyway.
So where does that leave people that, what's the consequences of this, Mark? I mean, you've been at this for many, many years. Have we ever seen such a pro-amnesty president as we see right now from your nonpartisan perch?
No, I don't think so. But there's two sort of ways to answer that. One is his own views about letting people move here illegally and letting them stay and all that. He probably is more pro-illegal immigration, but, you know, I'm not sure that George W. Bush, for instance, he would have given him a run for his money in the sense of what he actually believed. But what this president has done in undermining the Constitution with regard to immigration, in making up his own rules, basically subverting the rule of law, that really is unprecedented. And it's more than just immigration. It's undermining the Constitution. And I'm afraid we're going to have a, you know, Republican president someday who's going to say, well, you know, Congress won't give me this capital gains cut, tax cut that I want. So I'm just going to tell the IRS to prioritize and only enforce against certain people and just make up rules like that. It's just as illegal. And if this guy gets away with it in immigration, who's to say what he or someone else isn't going to try to get away with in the future?
Mark, can you hang on for a minute?
Sure.
All right, more coming up from Mark Kerkorian from the Center for Immigration Studies. It is 8:17.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning with Mark Kerkorian of the Center for Immigration Studies. Mark, if you don't mind, I'd like to go to your website, cis.org, and just look at some of the stories that y'all are have put up here. And let's start with the House Judiciary Committee examines deliberate dismantling of immigration enforcement. Has that ever happened before that the White House has dismantled immigration enforcement?
No, you've not seen this kind of real decline in immigration enforcement really ever. I mean, you know, President Clinton and President Bush, whatever their many faults, both consistently invested in increasing the capacity, in the enforcement capacity of the Immigration Service. And President Bush in particular, look, he was a big fan of amnesty, wanted to increase immigration. I mean, I don't agree with him on any of that stuff. But especially once Congress slapped him down and he realized that people really did not believe promises of enforcement in the future, he, toward the end of his administration, put even more effort into developing not just money and resources, although that too, but also developing the systems that we need if we are going to be able to enforce immigration law effectively in the future. And it's precisely some of those systems that this administration is dismantling. For instance, just to give a quick example, there's something called secure communities. And when I explain this to people, most of them say, you mean we weren't doing this already? What it is when a person is arrested, your fingerprints are scanned in when you're booked. Those go to the FBI, as everybody knows from watching TV, and they check and see whether you have, you know, there's warrants out for your arrest, whatever it is, they check your fingerprints. What they're also now doing under this new system, Secure Communities, is they send the fingerprints to Homeland Security, too. Have you been deported before? Are you on a watch list for terrorists? Whatever it is. Well, that was finally implemented, finished in being implemented in 2013. And what the president just announced in November was pulling the plug on this system, which is sort of the lowest common denominator basic enforcement tool. These guys pulled the plug on it. So, yes, this is unprecedented what we've seen from this administration in its just sort of almost instinctive aversion to enforcing immigration rules.
Mark, and I think the only person that I know of in Congress that seems to be sticking up for the American worker is Senator Sessions of Alabama. What type of world will our kids and grandkids live in if the illegals are allowed to work here legally without papers?
Well, there's first the narrow issue of the illegal immigrants who are already here. If they get legalized, what it does is it opens every job in the country to them. Because now, if you're an illegal immigrant, I mean, a lot of these people are already working, obviously, but they're working in more marginal jobs. They can't work in areas where the employers really do check, like security guards and truck drivers for certain, you know, for a hazmat, that kind of stuff. There's a lot of jobs that for Americans without college degrees, they're okay jobs. They're not phenomenal, but they're decent jobs that illegal immigrants actually have a hard time getting now. That would be ended if these guys get work permits, which is what the president wants to do. But the bigger question is, what if we do basically what this administration, as well as the Chamber of Commerce and all kinds of people, Paul Ryan even, all kinds of people want, which is that anybody gets to move here who wants a job, as long as they're not terrorists. But anybody. There's no limits, no numbers. The market determines it all. What happens then is that every American, especially less skilled Americans, are competing with the most desperate people in the world who would be happy to work for free as long as they were in the United States and, you know, in a place where there's basic order and you can drink the water and the police aren't shaking you down all the time. So it puts American workers of all kinds, but even more, especially blue-collar workers, at an extreme disadvantage if we allow this kind of thing to go through.
And there was also another hearing on Capitol Hill where you had, again, not to keep talking about Senator Sessions, but Mark, he seems to be the only one besides you guys doing anything, where he talked about the fragility of the Social Security system, that if we throw in the illegal aliens in there, it's going to make it even more turbulent than it is now.
Yeah, the pro-amnesty, pro-illegal immigration argument, again, from both the right and the left, the corporate folks as well as the leftists, what they say is this is great for Social Security because there'll be more people paying into it. Well, the problem, of course, is that, you know, immigrants get old like anybody else, and they're going to collect Social Security and Medicare. And the fact is that they're relatively low-skilled, so they don't make a lot of money. So they're not paying that much into Social Security and Medicare, but when they start using them, they actually make much more heavy use. In other words, they draw more out than they pay in, which is the way it is with poor Americans, too. But how can you add more poor people who are going to make more demands on a system and think that that's workable in the long term? It's just not. I mean, in the short term, you'll have some younger people paying modestly more into Social Security and Medicare. I'm talking about immigrants. If they're illegal and stay illegal for their entire lives, then they won't collect on the money, or at least not much of it. But if they're legalized, then they will collect and will end up with an even bigger problem down the road. So the idea that we can sort of magically fix our entitlement crisis with no pain, only by bringing in more people, it's a fantasy. It's like patent medicine. Some in the old days, you know, drink this and it'll make your hair grow back and solve all your problems. It's just as fake.
Now, I thought it was bad when I lived in North Carolina, where you had Bank of America at the time developing mortgages and actually advertising them in the Charlotte Observer and other places for illegal aliens. Now, apparently, the IRS is giving tax refunds to the illegals.
Yep. There's something called the Additional Child Tax Credit, which is when it's a tax credit, and not to get into the weeds here, but what it means is it's not just that you get a refund back. If you're the amount that you would get refunded isn't big enough, you get extra money from the taxpayer back. So that we are now for illegal immigrants, this isn't even about people who are going to be legalized. As long as they have what's called a tax ID number, which the IRS gives to illegal aliens so they can file tax returns, they get this additional child tax credit, which, like I said, is extra money, billions, in fact, a year, out of the taxpayers, out of the public fisc that goes to them. And if they're legalized under this amnesty that the president has announced, where he said it's just temporary and all the rest of it, nonsense. They get a Social Security number, and they can now get, will be able to get, the earned income tax credit, which is another one of these, essentially a welfare program run through the IRS, which is even more billions from the taxpayer to illegal immigrants.
Mark, we always appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Sure, happy to. Thanks.
All right, Mark Kerkorian, Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. That's CIS.org. Coming up next, what the city of Boise is doing to stamp out some homeless issues. We'll talk about that next. Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Oh, we love the Grammys here at 580KIDO. Kay Milley in the morning, joining us now from the city of Boise. Mike Journey. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good to have you with us here at 580KIDO. This is some of the issues that have been going on in the city for the past year or two have been great with the buildings and managing growth. Certainly, a lot of people look at the city of Boise with envy because of the overwhelming growth. And yet, other issues we have, whether it's here or Salt Lake or Portland, are the issue of dealing with folks that don't have a home. And I know the city is working with shelters and others to try to clean up the hobo hangout. What's the latest there?
Well, you're absolutely right. The city works really closely with partners, the shelters and other partners, and provides a lot of resources in order to do that, to help with that situation. You know, the situation with the underpass that you're talking about there is an interesting one. It's a microcosm of a larger issue that the city faces, and because it's such a high profile, I think people focus on it probably a little more than the overall situation warrants because of the larger issue of homelessness in the city. That's really the way that the mayor and the city of Boise are really focusing on addressing that issue to try to make it a holistic approach to how we deal with that situation. But the police department do keep a very close eye on the situation under the underpass. They it's a very admirable job and the way that they do that. There are a handful of police officers who are down there very regularly, very closely associated with the folks down there. They know their names. They know the names of their dogs. They're down there talking with them. It's really a health and safety issue for those folks. The city is really interested in making sure that they stay safe, that they're healthy, and then for the general community as well, making sure that stays as a manageable situation down there from a health and safety perspective.
Well, that's a community policing at its finest. Now,
absolutely.
Now, Mike, the challenge though for folks, and you know, whether it's talk radio, I mean, we never second guess anybody's solutions here. The issue involving you can't just tell people to hit the road; they have to have a place to go, and that's a challenge for any city, right?
That's right, and you know, I think a lot of the situation. That's exactly right. It's really working closely with our partners that do provide those services. You know, the city of Boise is the administrator for a collaboration called the Continuum of Care, and that is a funding mechanism through the federal government to provide direct services to the homeless. And we apply for the grant, we administer the grant, we handle the entire Ada County region for that grant. So other municipalities, the county itself, we are the lead agency on that. And so we pass that money through to the providers that do provide those services here in the city. It's over $1 million, and about 94% of that goes directly to homeless services in the city and for the region as well. so that's one way that we're directly working on the situation. And we have some other ways that we want to bring the conversation to the community in, as well. It's a very complex issue, Kevin. It's not about just putting a roof over someone's head. I think you touched on that just a second ago. It's not just about putting a roof over someone's head. A lot of the people involved in this situation have mental health challenges, addiction challenges. There might be a cultural situation with someone who is in that situation. Unexpected or extraordinarily challenging socioeconomic issues that they might have. So it's really just not about putting someone in a shelter or putting a roof over their head. It's about trying to tackle the situation holistically.
Mike Journey with the City of Boise, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. You know, you bring up a great point, Mike, when you're talking about a mental health issue. We've talked to law enforcement, and that's a challenge ever since the government defunded those homes back in the 80s of people that have mental health issues having nowhere to go and possibly, you know, being on the streets. You know, when you go to these shelters, you have people that have mental health issues.
That's right. You know, and a lot of folks in this situation, this is a choice for them. This is a choice that they make. They don't want to be inside. They don't want to be in the shelters. They're out there doing those things, doing that because that's the way that they feel comfortable. So you have that to battle. It's even if there is room in the shelter, they may choose not to do that. Now, of course, there is an no camping ordinance in the city, and oftentimes that when there is a situation where it's obviously egregious, and there's a real challenge with the health and safety concern, the police department will cite somebody for violation of that camping ordinance. If for example under at the underpass, if the situation gets to the point to where, you know, there might be a lot of drinking or something going on, there are citations that are handed out then. But at the end of the day, Kevin, what does that do for the situation? Okay, you give somebody a citation for that. They go before a judge. They don't have any money. They go before a judge. They go into the county lockup for a few days or a week or however long that sentence may be, and then they're out and they're right there again, and because you really haven't changed the situation for that person, that individual, and that's really the way that the mayor wants to work on that situation. Having said that, we are working through our partners at Allenbaugh House, which is the local, well, it's not the local, it's basically a detox center here. It's for providing addiction services and mental health services to people in those situations. It's a coalition of governments, of nonprofit partners, of businesses who came together several years ago to create that treatment center. The mayor and the rest of the entities involved in that are hoping to create a ongoing dialogue over this situation with the community, an education dialogue, a next steps for our community dialogue about this situation. We need more partners, Kevin. We need more people involved in this to address this and to help get to those next steps as a community. We need more help from local governments, from county governments, from the state governments. We need more help from the faith community, more help from the nonprofit sectors. We need to find the next steps for this challenge. And that's the way. So over the next year, you're going to hear me more about these conversations that our partners are having with the community in order to try to develop what those next steps are going to be.
Mike, we appreciate your time. We'd love to have you back, sir.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Again, it's a very complex situation, and we're looking forward to addressing this with our community partners.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Mike Journey joining us from the City of Boise, 8:46. Kevin Miller in the Morning, time for traffic at 580.
Country Valley's exclusive home for Kevin Miller, KIDOAM.com, 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore sent an 11th-hour order to state probate judges Sunday night, telling them to refuse to issue marriage licenses to gay couples. He says those judges are not bound by the ruling of a federal judge that the gay marriage ban is unconstitutional. Some people agree with Moore.
Marriage is between a man and a woman.
Others, like Benjamin Cooper with Equality Alabama, say the federal judge's ruling is overdue.
It is time to turn the page on our past.
Gay couples are expected to line up at courthouses across Alabama today to try and get married. It's not clear how many of the state's probate judges will follow Moore's directive. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
Kay Millie in the morning, 580 KIDO, joining us now from Birmingham, Alabama at 580 KIDO. The character who Sweet William is based off of, John Mounts, joins us, program director of WERC in Birmingham. John, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
I'm fine. So, Roy Moore in the news again, as we've been talking about. This is in his first showdown with the federal government 10, 15 years ago. You remember, Roy Moore was at the courthouse with the Ten Commandments because they were displayed in his courtroom, and the federal judge said you couldn't do that. So now he's back. What's the mood in Alabama?
Well, there is a lot of people who are just tired. It's unusual because there's a lot of people who are just tired of the whole issue. They almost wish it would go away. Others say, no, look, we already decided this. This is a state's rights issue. We voted on this overwhelmingly. 81% of Alabama voted for the Sanctity of Marriage Amendment back in 06. And Judge Moore is just saying, look, I'm the Supreme Court Justice, and this is the law of the land in Alabama. This is the federal court. It's not Trump, our court. It's a Tenth Amendment issue.
States' rights, indeed. Alabama, if not the most, one of the most culturally conservative states in the country. How is the gay issue played there?
It's interesting. There's a lot of folks who, they go one or two ways on. They either say, absolutely not, you can't do that. It's between one man and one woman, and that is what the Bible says, and that's how I feel about it. But others say the government doesn't need to be involved in marriage, regardless of what kind of marriage we're talking about. So that's kind of the two viewpoints on it. I don't think anyone is out and out saying that this is a great thing and we're going to be the next, we're going to be the next thing. But there is an issue of we're really next to South Carolina. We're the first in the Deep South to really go to take on this thing head on, and we're not going to be the last state in the nation like what has happened in the past with other issues with Alabama.
I see. John Mounts with us, Kay Millie in the morning, 580 KIDO. John and I have worked together for many, many years. Always a joy to have him on. People will vilify the state of Alabama. You recall the night Brian Williams came to town, and when he was talking about threats at the 16th Street Baptist Church, one of his early embellishments. But still, the ridicule of the Yellowhammer State persists. Do you expect the not only the feds, but the media to rip y'all for not being down with the gays?
I appreciate the use of the word y'all. And yes, they already have. They're comparing Justice Moore to Governor Wallace standing in the schoolhouse door preventing. And I think it's unfortunate. We just had Jesse Jackson here on Sunday to stand with this thing because he's likening it to the civil rights movement for equality among blacks and their ability to vote. He says it's the same thing with homosexual marriage.
How has that been received? Because I've reported and others have said that you have a lot of folks in the black community, whether it's in Alabama or Idaho or throughout the country, that don't equate civil rights with gay rights.
That's an interesting point. There was a black, and I forget his name. We had him on our morning show locally here in Birmingham talking. He was a black pastor, and he was talking about how absolutely he is appalled at the way that we're trying to make one into the other, because one is about the way you're born, the other is about a behavior. And that's his position on the issue.
Right. God rest our great friend Reverend Woods, wherever he may be. So this decision will continue to permeate. Well, now that the Supreme Court has smacked Justice Moore, do you have any idea how many of the judges will follow Roy Moore and how many will follow the Supreme Court?
The majority are going with the U.S. Supreme Court. Well, it's not the Supreme Court at this point. It's just the federal court. But the most are going with the federal court, not with Justice Moore. As it was stated this morning by our own congressman who just elected Gary Palmer, he said, look, it's an issue of Judge Moore is their boss, but the federal court, it's the law. So your boss is telling you to break the law. What do you do if you're a
if you're a judge, and most of them are going to go with, I'm going to go with the law, not necessarily what my boss says, even though my boss says you should break the law.
What's been the mood of, and I'll be gratuitous here, my old listeners there in Alabama, what are your listeners saying?
Your old listeners. Most of them are saying that it's absolutely between a man and a woman, and they're appalled that this is happening. They don't appreciate the interlopers coming in from outside the state telling us how to do things in our state. Again, everyone, 81% of Alabama says constitutional amendment, one man, one woman. It's people from outside who are coming down here to agitate and turn things up. But again, it sounds an awful lot like the civil rights argument we heard back in the 1960s when they said the outside agitators are coming in trying to change the way we do things in Alabama.
I wouldn't know. I don't remember the 1960s. Apparently you do.
I don't remember. No, I'm not Brian Williams. I'm saying that.
So that's your opinion.
No, it's not my opinion.
That's your opinion. Yes, it is your opinion, because that's still up for discussion, is it not?
What?
Where are the hoses and everything else that happened in the 60s in Alabama? Have they used the hoses on people there recently? So your analogy doesn't fit. John Mounts, thank you very much. We appreciate it. 850-853 in Eagle at 580-KIDO. As always, when you're talking to these folks, you always got to hold them accountable. We do appreciate our friend John Mounts for joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580-KIDO. Coming up, Glenn Beck, Dave Ramsey, and Sean Hannity. Do appreciate you keeping it right here to 580-KIDO. Do appreciate you listening. And good day. God bless. Keep the faith and watch out for the rain.